News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
So many events of the day going on from over the weekend. A lot of big stories out there. The death of the Iranian president, among them. Trump's trial, among them. The debate, the rally in the Bronx. A lot of stuff going on with Trump. But the text line is concerned about stealing pens.
Yeah.
So you threw that out there at the end of last hour. And So what are they saying on the text line?
Well, we had that stat, 39% of people said it's acceptable to take a pen from a hotel room. And 9% of people said it's acceptable to take a pen from your waiter or waitress. You know, the pen they bring along with the checkbook whenever you sign for your check for your food. And makes sense, right? Because, you know, hotels, they very often have their logo on there.
Yeah, it's like a promotional pen.
Right. So you feel like, I can take this, just like the little shampoo bottle. But I know waiters and waitresses who work on finding the perfect pen. You know, they want something that writes well and writes on those checks well. And those aren't exactly marketing items, usually.
No.
Most of you tend to agree. Fish River Frank said, at best, I borrow pens because I'm probably going to leave it at the next place I use it. However, I've returned pens for two waiters and waitresses and others. If it has advertising on it, like Joe Sean's Bail Bonds, I'm assuming they want to take it and advertise for them. Yeah, I think that's the fair breakdown of how things work. Now, D texted and said, I work for a bank, and we appreciate people taking pens because that is part of our advertisement. Well, D, if that's the case, why do you work so hard to chain them down to the store? Maybe you're talking about two different kinds of pens. Like when you open a new account and you're talking to an account manager, maybe they have the bank pen they'll hand over to you. But for the ones you're signing the deposit slips or the withdrawal forms,
they're always attached to a chain, aren't they?
Those are torqued down, usually, yeah.
Yeah, I've never tried to leave with a pen because it would take a lot of burglary type work.
Yeah, you need some lock cutters to get those out of there.
I don't want the pen that bad.
Texter says even worse than stealing the pen from your waiter or waitress is stealing their pen and then stiffing them on a tip.
Well, yeah, of course, that'd be terrible. Yeah, the pen stays with the waiter or waitress. Also, sometimes
I leave my card with them on accident.
Well, there, you know, you have that too. So you always want to have a friend in place there that will take care of your card. So how about if you leave your card, but you took the pen? Now you put yourself in a pretty compromised position.
Yeah, like, well, you have a hostage.
A card? Really? I didn't think I saw one here.
Yeah.
It's always a great feeling when you go back to a place the next day and they've got your card.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's happened for sure. Gardner says hotel pens are advertising. Yeah, I definitely think so. And then Ron, the nurse from Wilmer, says a nurse will hunt you down if you take their pen.
Hmm.
Huh.
Okay. Well,
All right, so that's Pen Talk here on Mobile Mornings right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You wanted something new on your Monday? Now we gave it to you, Pen Talk. So, okay, Trump today, you've got, they're going to resume their cross-examination of Michael Cohen today.
That's right.
He's the final witness for the prosecution. That means Trump's New York criminal trial is getting close to ending.
Yeah, and at the end of their hearings last week, which actually wrapped on Thursday because Trump went to see his son Barron graduate on Friday, and then he had a speech at the NRA on Saturday, I believe, NRA convention. When they were wrapping things up on Thursday, the judge, Marchand, said for jurors to get ready to possibly deliberate as early as this week, although before then, Trump's team will have to decide what witnesses they want to bring on their side of the case.
Including possibly Trump.
And then there's two more names that they've floated out there. And one worked for the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, and they were planning on bringing this person up to describe how paying to kill a story or NDAs aren't a violation of campaign laws. But they're saying that the judge, Marchand, is hesitant to put this person on the on trial for some reason, or put them up there to have the defense
testify,
examine them. Yeah, the other one here is Robert Costello, who it's just when you're talking about a certain level where the attorneys have attorneys, right?
Yeah, so he was Cohen's attorney.
He was Cohen's attorney, right.
And he would really take Cohen to task if he were on the stand.
He would. And so we'll see if he's up there or not. But he got a lot of what he had to say out in front of a House committee last week, and then through interviews on Fox Business, I believe. He might have went on Fox News as well. Robert Costello is his name. And just the basic story. So he was Cohen's attorney. And then when Cohen was facing serious charges and ended up serving time for the violations back in 2018, Costello was saying that Cohen was near suicidal. He was talking about jumping off a building. And he was apparently telling Costello, he said, I don't have anything on Trump. That they're trying to get me to flip on Trump, and that's going to knock my sentence down by, you know, this much. And so Costello.
I've got nothing to work with.
Yeah, Costello's saying through all of his conversations with Cohen that Cohen was painting Trump as in the clear. And that's presumably what he would say if he were on the stand this week. Here's Costello on Fox last week.
He said specifically, and I cross-examined him on this, this was my idea. It was his idea to take care of the NDA because he had been contacted by a lawyer for Stormy Daniels who said she was going to claim that Donald Trump had sex with her. He kept on saying, I have nothing on Donald Trump.
And we talked about this a little bit on Friday, but on Thursday, Trump's attorney Blanche just absolutely crushed Cohen in this cross-examination. And we learned that this very crucial call, which the prosecution is basically, their case hinges
kind of,
on this.
It's kind of the linchpin conversation in all this. And now we're finding out that maybe Trump was never part of that call.
So it was a 96-second call.
Okay.
And in that call, Cohen claimed that Trump told him, go ahead, pay the $130,000 to Stormy Daniels. Well, it comes out with Blanche looking through Cohen's text messages that he was communicating with Trump's bodyguard just previous to this call, and Cohen was apparently upset because a 14-year-old kept prank calling his cell phone, and he's highly peeved in these text messages, and he's texting the bodyguard, who do I need to talk to get this to stop? The bodyguard says, well, give me a call, and that's when this 96-second phone call occurred.
Interesting.
But Cohen told Blanche, he said, but I also talked to Trump, and that's when that happened.
So yeah, but did he change it a little bit on Friday? Didn't he say, I think that's how I recall it, or what?
Yeah, he used, you know, lawyer terminology up there. He said, that's the way I whatever it was. Yeah. But his main claim is, yeah, on that 96-second phone call, I also talked to Trump. So we have to assume that he was calling. He was mad this 14-year-old kept prank calling him. He calls the bodyguard to somehow take care of that. I don't know what the plan was there.
Wow.
But he also got the go-ahead from Trump in that call. So the jury will have to decide whether they believe that or not. And also while keeping in mind all of the many other times that Cohen has lied.
Yeah.
And then these TikTok videos, which he just keeps pushing out and has been pushing out for years, where he is saying everything under the sun about Trump and how much he dislikes him, and then admitting on the stand on Thursday that he wants to see Trump put away in prison. So you have the two main witnesses here, Stormy Daniels, whose actual recollection and what she had to say, not really germane to the actual case.
Yeah,
just
salacious.
It was salacious, but she too admitted she wants to see Trump put behind bars.
Hmm.
So you have two of their main witnesses who clearly have axes to grind. But, you know, we say all this, and it comes down to the jury, right?
It does. It comes down to the jury, and what do they want to believe? If they walked in, they're all 12, convinced or looking at themselves as the opportunity to be heroes by convicting Donald Trump in their court, then they can hear all the evidence you can throw out there to them. What do they want to believe?
Mm-hmm.
And is there testimony that changes the core of what they do believe? For criminal trials in the state of New York, Dalton, the jury must unanimously agree on the verdict. That means that one lone juror can serve as a holdout, forcing what is called a hung jury. Now, if 11 of Trump's jurors agree on the conviction, one disagrees, Merchant would likely suggest that they continue to deliberate, like, let's give this a little time here. But now, if you have more than one dissenter, that may change things. But you do have to get all 12 jurors to
agree
to convict. Yes.
And at the beginning of this trial, and really through the first, it's only been 4 weeks. They said this might be an 8-week trial when things began, but you know they could wrap this week. But remember, at the beginning, it was all about Trump intimidating jurors, and they put this gag order on him, and they said he was threatening by talking about these jurors and how heavily Democratic Manhattan is, mm-hmm. and now he doesn't think he's getting a fair trial. Said he was putting jurors' lives in danger. When we start seeing, and I don't know if this will work the same way this week, but we've seen it before. When you start seeing maybe rumors of how the jury will rule, or you hear, oh, one juror seems to be, because you get leaks from inside the proceedings,
especially
right?
Especially they're not sequestered, right? They're going.
I guess not. Yeah,
they're
I'm
going
not
home.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, and how are they avoiding all this coverage too?
Right. You know, of course.
It's impossible. So, but if you start seeing leaks come out from the jurors' deliberations, how's the some of the left-leaning national media going to handle this? Because we've seen previously where. Well, they do exactly what the Trump was, what the judge was saying that Trump was doing and putting jurors' lives in danger. If you start hearing about certain jurors who might not be willing to convict and then somehow a little bit of personal information leaks out there.
They're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They're,
so I'm not saying that will happen. I'm saying we've seen something like that happen before.
What you're saying is let's keep an eye out for this. And if you see it. It might be telling a different story behind the scenes. Like this would be media that would like to see Trump convicted, playing the cards that they have.
Yeah, and hearing
regardless of the safety of jury members, which they claim to be, you know, want to enforce that most of all.
And you know, when you're a journalist in a like at a sports press conference or in the media booth at a game. The rules are you're not supposed to cheer, right? You're supposed to be very objective while you're covering the game. Well, you'd think the same would be for news media, but there's been reports from this trial that wherever they have a lot of the news media kind of hemmed up that's covering this trial, there have been like cheers when Stormy Daniels says something or when Michael Cohen says something, and it's been very evident that some in the media are just rooting for, you know, Trump to be convicted.
Yep.
And it would be their best day if Trump were sent to jail. I'm sure it would get a lot of clicks, but... It could wrap this week, which would be much sooner than a lot of them expected.
And we'll talk about the debates here coming up, too. They've agreed to two, right?
They've agreed to two. So, and then a vice presidential debate as well.
Yeah. And so that means Trump's got to
pick one.
Choose one. Yeah. also, I just think it is so interesting about this rally in the Bronx on Thursday, 6 p.m. at a public park there. It holds about 35, or they have room for 3,500 people. Is I guess they've got to apply for it. Who will make up that audience in the Bronx? That is 56% Hispanic, 28% Black. Again, 56% consider themselves Hispanic. Little Asian population. 8% of the Bronx is white. 8%. What does that mean? Do the natives actually turn out for Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Is there that image and that imagery where people who are black and brown are going crazy for Donald Trump in the Bronx?
That would be, I think, a pretty savvy political move if he were to do that. As you see, the numbers for Biden among Hispanics and black voters
going down.
And we heard from, you know, Shamari Figures over the weekend as well, who kind of spoke about that, too, when asked by Al Sharpton. We'll get to that audio later.
Mm-hmm.
Al Sharpton asked him whether Biden's losing votes among minorities was a big deal, and Figures kind of brushed that off.
He did. We'll play that in a little bit, but he kind of brushed it off. You're right. But even in the state of Alabama, is Trump, I won't say the conservatives or the Republicans necessarily, really Trump, and it may play a role in the Dobson versus Figures if there are black voters who feel more Republican in their core values. Dobson could get some numbers there, but is Trump beginning to be a more popular figure among black Alabamians and black Americans? It's worth a conversation, right?
I think so.
I mean, everybody knows who he is. What's the take on him being tried over and over again? I think there are some black Americans that aren't crazy about what they're seeing with Trump being prosecuted this way.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
It is 8:21, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. We'll see you at that rally. That'll be something. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 7:26 on Mobile Mornings.
And still some pen talk going on the text line, but also on this Trump trial. Michael says, for Trump's sake, I hope the jury will be more fair and open to the facts than Kenyon Brown was. We'll get more into the Brown report also here in just a couple minutes. A texter here says, I'm a 40-year-old black man and Trump is not gaining... Well, texter says, I'm a 40-year-old black man and he is not gaining any support in the barbershop. I presume you're talking about Trump there, but I guess there's a chance you're talking about Biden as well. If you could clarify, that'd be great.
My guess is he's talking about Trump.
I would think so.
You know, if... But you're listening to us, which we appreciate, and give us your own feelings as well. Mm-hmm. You're a 40-year-old black man, what do you think about the politics of the day? What's going on?
Rock and roll doctor, back to our pen talk, said China makes 98% of all pens. Is that true? So they've got the chip market cornered. Well, they have, you know, Taiwan over there. But also the pen market, is that what I'm to understand? I guess it makes perfect sense. Reynolds
says...
Cheap
labor is cheap labor, I guess, no matter what you're making.
Reynolds says, I had a customer trade pens with me one time, left me a dried up pink Bic pen, and took my good one.
Wow.
That's a terrible trade. Keep the text coming, 251-343-0106. So the latest on the Kenyon Brown report, and when we went over this after it was published... I guess, was that about a month ago, month and a half ago at this point?
About a month.
We talked about how much of it was redacted, right? It was 98 pages, and about a third of it was redacted, I believe. A quarter to a third of it redacted. And many of those, you could see who the interviewee was, but then all of their words were redacted. And for the city council members, it said, like, city council member number one, redacted. City council member number two, redacted. So we knew that some... from the administration, their words were left out. And the mayor talked about it a little bit afterwards, and specifically regarding members of law enforcement who were interviewed.
Yeah.
Maybe those who answered to Prine. They didn't realize that their interviews would be published. So before the report was actually put out there, they said, hey, you know, I need that redacted. I thought I was speaking with you one-on-one.
Right.
But Dale Leach with Lanyap reports that apparently, Brown also interviewed former MPD chief and former executive director with the city, Lawrence Batiste, and none of his statements were used at all. And I'm not even sure if they put him in there in the redacted form. But also the same for current city chief of staff, James Barber. And Dale with Lanyap, Dale Leach, spoke with city spokeswoman Candace Cooksey, who confirmed neither Batiste's interview nor an interview with Barber were included in the report. And then Dale got on the phone with both Cooksey and Barber, and they said they were unsure why Batiste's comments weren't included, but they questioned if he was even involved, if he was heavily involved or even employed by the city when most of those six interactions that triggered the review took place. Barber said, we can't answer some of those questions for you. We didn't control the report. Barber said that he and the mayor met with Brown, but that session did not include formal investigatory questions and were more about the parameters of the investigation.
More about running up hours.
Yeah, maybe so.
Look at that total.
$297,000.
Should be, by any measure, the greatest report of all time.
Should have been.
It's 8:30 with Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.
On FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on a Monday. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're great, and some great weather on the way all week is what it's looking like right now. It'd be a good time to get over, get a new or pre-owned vehicle from McConnell, and then ride around a little bit, huh?
That's right. McConnellAutomotive.com. Man, got to check that site out. We've got some great vehicles. From the good-looking GMC Hummers to GMC Sierras to Yukon XLs, Acadias, Terrains, to Buicks, Enclaves, and Visions, the Vistas, the new little great-looking Buick under $30,000. I mean, we've got a great selection of stuff here. And like I said, it's getting to be fishing season. We got a bunch of four-wheel drive trucks here to pull your boats with. And come by and see us. We're sitting here in beautiful Midtown Mobile, east of I-65 on Dolphin. If you got any questions, give us a call, 251-476-4141.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Erratic. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, to the text line we go. What a shame you had to quit talking about Trump and go to a sports report. Not sure what that means.
And Doug, he said, he's talking about the Trump trial. He said, too much detail. So apparently we went into too much detail about what Trump is doing this week. I don't know.
Well, we're near the end of the trial, and I just thought it'd be helpful to know exactly what needs to happen for him to actually be convicted.
Yeah, and it could happen this week.
Good.
And with the three of the other four trials looking like they'll be pushed back until maybe at least November, this is really the only one. If the Democrats are going to get him, this would be it, as the way it's looking right now. And one of the others, the federal trial in D.C., hinges on the Supreme Court and their ruling on presidential immunity, which it should come down before the end of June. I guess it could come down earlier, but if the Supreme Court doesn't come out with their decision until the end of next month, then that trial too would be pushed back. Looks like the Mar-a-Lago trial on the documents, that has been pushed back by the judge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looking less and less likely he'll see his day in court for that. And then you've got the Georgia case, where now I think maybe eight or more of the defendants have appealed the judge's ruling that Fannie Willis stay on the case. So that's been pushed back indefinitely as well. This is the one they've got if they want to get him,
mm-hmm.
and it could come to an end this week. So got to let you know what's going on.
Yep.
Jason says, I've been told that Batiste took a deal similar to the one that Prine declined. His silence was bought with a figurehead position at the youth center. Texter here says, let's see. I find it wrong that the people who are paid by our tax dollars get to redact any statements. Let's be real here. The statements that are being redacted are the ones that we want to and need to hear. I agree. Now, you know, I don't know all the rules, but I guess if you claim attorney-client privilege, then that's your privilege, right? And I guess the city council was allowed to do that. But in this report from Dale Leash at Lanyap, he spoke with Corey Penn, District 1 councilman. He was one of the four councilors that was interviewed. He said he did not request his comments be redacted. The comments he gave to Brown were similar to the ones that he's made publicly about the police and the six incidents investigated as part of the report. Councilman Penn said, I don't know why it's redacted. They asked me my thoughts, and I didn't mind them being shared. So I don't know if the redaction of the city council members, well, at least Penn's, I don't know if they redacted that just to be on the safe side or what exactly. And I found this line interesting in Dale's story. He said, another counselor who requested anonymity said they did not request the city redact their comments. So why they want to be anonymous when saying that they didn't request the city redact their comments, I'm not exactly sure, but
that's the
report that Dale got. Barber said many of the law enforcement officials interviewed believed that the information in the report would be redacted. And then once officials received the report from Brown, they redacted many of the comments made from those interviewed, which delayed the public release of the document. I think it's fair that we see what the city council had to say in those interviews, at the very least.
I agree. And when things are redacted, what are the various reasons that you redact because of someone's position or,
well,
you know, why do you just leave it out? Why do you show that it's been redacted? What is that?
And I can
prove?
See, well, because it's part of the report, and in many cases, you know, it might be crucial to the report, even if it's redacted. But I can understand why they would redact the comments of some of the people who Prine was their superior. Just think about generally any case where you're looking into alleged wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is outed as being someone who said something about their superior, then it would be less likely people would cooperate in the future.
I got it.
When they're looking into something like that. So that makes sense to me for some of the people. But like the texter said there, you know, if they're elected officials and they're speaking with the attorney doing the report, you wouldn't think that would be redacted. Bonesaw, and I don't have the bone saw sound effect ready here, but he said, in HVAC, I use special G2 pens that also are a stylus at the tip. If someone tries to keep my pen, they should expect their AC unit to be removed, and they will be dragged into the street and beaten. All right, Bonesaw. A little, little too violent for a Monday morning, but he clearly...
don't mess with his pen.
He finds his pens very, very important. Internationally, this news from Iran, it seems like a big, big dang story. I mean, with everything that's going on in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, with their role in the support of Hamas, Hezbollah, and these, like you say, right now, Israel in this war with Hamas that looks like they have no plans to ease up, it looks like, despite what some people internationally and even in America are saying. So now you got to have some conspiracy theories out there, or just, do you call them conspiracy theories or just theories?
Just, like, yeah.
Right? Like conspiracy theory feels like you're a level down. Does this need a conspiracy theory or just a theory? Like, well, what happened? Who would benefit from that helicopter going down?
Right. And we know the capabilities of Mossad and the Israel forces, and we know how angry they are with Iran. And did they do this is the question, which right now it does look like it was a helicopter accident. You mentioned some of the weather. Now, one of the craziest conspiracy theories is Israel's ability to, I guess, seed clouds and affect the weather. And so some of the wildest are that they engineered the
bad weather,
which
they didn't have to do anything else.
Right.
You know, which, it's like our thumbprints aren't on this because it just happened to be that crappy weather that day.
Yeah.
But if they seeded that weather, that would be... That is next level.
Well, yeah, that is very next level. Because what's more plausible, that or that they were able to turn the helicopter pilot, you know, and that he took it down. But that's not what's being alleged right now. And Raisi, you know, when this news came down yesterday, so the first reports were that it was a hard landing.
Hard landing.
For his chopper.
And an incident. And they didn't want to go beyond that. I really thought, you know, I thought... That was the story, that they had this hard landing and they were shook up by it a little bit, or they were concerned that it happened. Then that was the story. And then, of course, you find out, no, they crashed. It was more than a hard landing, and they crashed, and all these people are dead.
And that chopper was missing for at least 12 hours as they looked for it. So I'm guessing that initial report of the hard landing, maybe they heard from
the pilot,
somebody on the chopper as it was going down or right after it went down. But you had the president of Iran, Ibrahim Raisi, who was on board and died. He was 63 years old. And Wall Street Journal says that deprives the supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei of a longtime ally. As all of this fighting goes on in the Middle East, they announced Raisi's death officially earlier today. State TV for Iran reported the helicopter carrying him and Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahan had made a difficult landing. Then hours after Raisi's death was confirmed, Khamenei announced 5 days of national mourning, and he went ahead and appointed Mohammed Mokhbar, who is the first vice president, as the new head of the executive branch. As far as response, what's the Israeli response? Well, no immediate comment from the White House or Israel. Iran had blamed Israel for the 2019 killing of Mohsin Fakhrizadeh, widely regarded as the father of Iran's nuclear weapons program. And that's something we've seen year in and year out, right? And Sean talked about this on Midday Mobile not that long ago, but there's not many more deadlier professions than working in the nuclear weapons program for Iran. They seem to find themselves missing very often.
Yep.
The EU, though, did reach out and sent its sincere condolences to the families of those killed in the crash. But Wall Street Journal says the deaths of Raisi and Amir Abdullahan unlikely to result in any significant change in the country's foreign policy, including Tehran's support for Hamas. So they don't think a whole lot's going to change here. But also this morning coming down from the International Criminal Court, they have put out arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu. The International Criminal Court announced it's seeking arrest warrants for Israel PM Netanyahu and the Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar. So they want to bring them both in on war crime charges. The charges are, of course, tied to the October 7th attacks and then the war in Gaza. Warrants are also being sought for Israel's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, and two top Hamas leaders. Maybe they're just trying to get them all in the same room so they can work this out.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Aren't those guys like in Qatar, some of those guys with their billions of dollars?
Yep.
So also, is Israel, have they been formally accused by anyone of this takedown of the helicopter? I guess there is speculation out there right now, especially after April the 1st, they took out like seven in Damascus in Syria. They took out top leaders. That was Israel. That was quite a move. And so if you're going to do that, wouldn't you be capable of doing this?
Oh, yeah. I think they're capable of it. But I think right now it's just suspicions. I don't think anyone has actually said that Israel was behind this officially.
But just a month and a half ago, they did something pretty drastic, right. I think.
And then remember you had internationally the Iran missile launches against Israel, and most of those were stopped.
That's
like
right.
99%
that was
of them.
In retaliation to the April 1st attack.
So was this Israel finding a
one
way
more time?
Yeah, to get right back? I don't know. But as far as the criminal court is concerned, I think we've seen this plenty of times previously where you've got a war going on. They put out arrest warrants for the top guy. I think didn't this happen with Putin, too? I might be wrong on that. But Israel, not a member of the ICC, and they're disputing its jurisdiction. So these warrants that are out for Netanyahu, it looks like they'll just mostly be ignored going forward.
Yeah, and so what does happen going forward in Gaza? It appears that they haven't quite done it yet. I guess they had some movement, but they haven't really had the all-out blast attack that they say they're planning on to root out all of Hamas. There's going to be a lot of lives lost there. There's a lot of debate that you can hear across all kinds of political platforms where not everybody's in on this. Not everybody thinks that the best move at this point is for Israel to go in and root these guys out because of the loss of life of civilians. Mm-hmm. That without a doubt, is going to happen if they do that. And that's, of course, you have Hamas putting their civilians in harm's way as human shields. So you got that going on. That's why if you're going to round everybody up, you have to get the Hamas guys too, because they're doing some drastic, terrible stuff on their end.
Those are the shields they're using, like you said. And the biggest pushback, though, stateside, are from these colleges. And remember, everyone's graduating. So I think that's all going to die down here in the next few weeks.
But a lot of the agitators are not college students.
Right. So are they going to continue the agitation elsewhere at state houses? I don't know whether this will continue here in America or whether some of these protests will die down now that school is coming to an end. But you know that's what the Biden administration wants to see, is a little less of the like the Morehouse College thing that happened this weekend where they turned their backs on him. I don't think that's doing well for him or his poll numbers going into November.
It's not. And then you have, of course, finding out that a lot of this group thought is projected by a lot of the professors on staff at these universities. This is how they feel in many cases.
Lisa texting in, if Israel could engineer the weather, do you think they would be at war? SMH, shaking my head. That's what Lisa's doing. Hey, I'm just saying there's people out there who truly believe that the way I was looking online last night and they're saying, oh, Israel engineered the weather to knock this. There's easier ways, believe me. Fire Dog says the old boss, same as the new boss in Iran. Yeah, that's the way it's looking according to Wall Street Journal. And then Doug says two targets in one helicopter. That's the case, is you had the foreign minister and the president of Iran both in the same chopper, which doesn't really sound like the smartest move on Iran's.
No, all those people on that. Yeah, those two primarily. That doesn't sound like in a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
They can go down.
Yep, they've been known to.
Yeah, they can just go down on their own. That maybe would have happened here, though. A lot of people are doubting that. 8:51, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, and we'll look over the Jeff Porch Show straight ahead. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 855. Mobile, Breeze Airways now flying nonstop to Orlando from Mobile International Airport, the one just minutes from downtown Mobile. Very convenient to the Eastern Shore, by the way. Want to make sure you're aware of that so you don't have to take off to try to fly out of places like Pensacola, maybe Biloxi. No. A nice new nonstops, just an hour away from all the fun at the theme parks, and you need to you don't need to drive down to Orlando anymore. You take these very nice Airbus A220s made right here in Mobile. Start your vacation the moment you take off with Breeze Airways. Book your flights at Breeze at flybreeze.com. And you can now fly down on Wednesday, return on Saturday, or the vice versa. Depart Saturday, return on Wednesday, your choice. Breeze is also now booking through January, and this is cool. You can earn Breeze points with every purchase. Get more with the bundles. Choose nice, nice, nicer, or nicest for total flexibility, extra baggage, added comfort, Wi-Fi, and more. Book your nonstop flight today at flybreeze.com. That's FlyBreeze.com.
Jeff Porcio on the way next, and his guests for today. He'll have State Representative Shane Stringer on in hour number one, Dale Jackson with WVNN and Yellowhammer News in hour number two, and then in the third hour with Jeff Poor, State Auditor Andrew Sorrell joined. So you want to keep it tuned, FM Talk 106.5, and listen to Jeff, and then, of course, Midday Mobile that will follow with Sean Sullivan. A couple entertainment news items to get to here. So, and I haven't watched American Idol in probably over a decade. I checked it out last week to see if the hometown boy, Tristan Harper, would move on out of McIntosh, Alabama.
He ended up like fifth overall or something like that.
Yeah, he was either fourth or fifth. He didn't make the cut for the top three, but they're going to have a homecoming for him here this week. The Mohwa Band of Choctaw Indians in the town of McIntosh. Friday night, they'll have a Tristan Harper concert. Tristan Harper, the Dreamcatcher in concert, starts at 6 o'clock Friday night on the Mohwa Choctaw Reservation in Mount Vernon, about a 2.5-hour show, they said here. Then Saturday at noon, a homecoming parade for Harper in McIntosh. And then Saturday night, the Mohwas will hold a powwow in Harper's honor. So that's very cool they're doing that for him. And then the end of an era, you know, we already saw, of course, Alex Trebek in the end of his run. Now it's Pat Sajak's turn to hang it up. After 41 seasons spanning 43 years, Sajak's time as host of Wheel of Fortune will come to an end in less than 3 weeks. Of course, he announced his retirement about a year ago, and we discussed it then, but he's already recorded his last episodes, and they're now saying the last show for Sajak will air on June 7th, capping a week of shows themed Thanks for the Memories. They said they've collected some of Sajak's funniest moments for those final episodes.
Oh, that was hard to do.
They had 43 years. I'm sure they found something.
Yeah.
Vanna White, though, will continue to co-host as this young upstart is going to take over for Sajak. Ryan Seacrest is his name.
Why not? Pat Sajak came into our studio when I was in Columbus, Georgia. And what I noticed most about him was his head was shaped like a TV. So that's why he does so well.
It makes sense now.
Yeah, it did to me. It's 8:59.